Alrighty, good morning. Once again, I'm going to do something similar to what I did last week, a little different. So last week, doing this style of lesson where I kind of do two short lessons back to back, hopefully in a similar theme. And so last week we did the Book of Daniel and a story from Daniel, and this week I'll do another story and a topical idea. I was saying earlier I wanted to print out a handout for this so you could kind of take notes along with it, but that failed miserably due to technology or the person operating it or something. But anyway, so I don't know. Also failed to print out my own notes, so I hope the computer doesn't go down. so anyway. All right. But yeah, so that's kind of the idea. So borrowed the same title slide from last time, different words though, which is, so this story is Nebuchadnezzar's statue dream in Daniel chapter 2. So I'll go ahead and get that ready. Daniel chapter 2, and okay. So tried to improve my timeline chart a little bit. Still, I don't know. I still wanted to be a little better. I don't know. But anyway, so just like last time, we're in the time of the exile to Babylon. I like doing the chart like this. The way I remember Bible timeline things is in chunks of 2,000 years, approximately. If you're a scholar, you'll tell me Abraham was about 1800 BC or something. Approximately 2,000 years from creation to Abraham, 2,000 years from Abraham to Jesus, and about 2,000 years from Jesus to now. So that helps me remember that. And then if you want to divide that a little more, in the middle of those first two chunks, the flood is somewhere around the middle of that 2,000 years. And in the main Bible timeline is that other 2,000 years, right? That is the bulk of, that is almost everything, in our scriptures, other than the first few chapters of Genesis. And so, you've got David smack in the middle. He's right at 1000 BC. It is just dead center. And then the, Moses is about halfway before that, and the exile is about halfway after that. So it's some nice, neat little 500 year chunks, in that section. If you ever, want help trying to memorize, or keep track of really what's going on in the Bible and when. So. But we're there toward the end, toward the end of the Old Testament writings, here in the book of Daniel. So, for the story that we're going to read in Daniel 2, as an overview, the king has a dream, it's King Nebuchadnezzar, and, he doesn't tell anyone about it, but, He asks people to interpret it, and no one can explain it until Daniel comes along and reveals it through the wisdom of God given to him. And in the dream, you've got the statue that we find out eventually represents real earthly kingdoms that will come, that will rise and fall. Then at the end, there's this stone that takes over, that crushes the statue, and that is God's kingdom that's going to take over the world. The other note I was going to say is on this page. So, why is the story important? And it's that dream, right? It's, I'm going to stand by the way I wrote this. It predicts three world empires. So there's four. The first one's Babylon, which is what's going on right then. And then there's three more. Now, some of those nations, societies, whatever you want to call them, exist already, but they're not world empires, I would say. They're not the dominant world empire at that time. so That's what I'm, it's kind of what it's predicting is the rise of the, these nations into world empires. I'll talk about what they are later, but, and then the other big thing is it's a key thing. We talked about this last week that it describes the coming of the church. And so that's a pretty important prophecy. If you remember one verse, Daniel 2:44, that's the one to remember. That the kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and it shall stand. We have a song about that, as well. So, main characters being that king, Nebuchadnezzar, who has the dream. There's magicians, and they have a lot of different names. Let's see, mine says magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, which, I don't know why that's supposed to mean something specific, because the Chaldeans are just the people that live in Babylon. But anyway, it names them specifically, and they seem to have kind of a role in the story later. And then, of course, there's Daniel, who's our hero, right? And he's the one that explains the dream. What I don't have here is good old Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They are in the story, but very briefly, so I don't call them main characters. All right, so let's read it, and I'll just put the outline up on the screen, but I'll read through the text. This is a long chapter here, so this will take a little bit of time to read through. But and in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians, the astrologers, and the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans, for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king, and the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac. So mine says Syriac in the King James. Yours probably says Aramaic. I never thought about this. This is a quick footnote, but Aram is Syria. And Aramaic is the language of Syria. I never pieced that together until the other day. So anyway, the spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac or Aramaic. O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream, with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and honor. Therefore show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation of it. They're like, can you just tell us? Verse 8, the king answered and said, I know of certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. So he's like, you're stalling. verse 9, but if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for you've prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation thereof. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore, there is no king, Lord. There is no king, Lord, nor ruler that asked any such thing at any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other than can show it before the king, except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. So, you know, they're saying, you're being unreasonable. You at least tell us what the dream is. And he just won't, right? So, but they give a hint there. The gods, as they call them, should be able to do it. So verse 12, for this cause, the king was angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And that would include Daniel. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? And then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. So I'm not sure if he didn't really know what the deal was or whatever, but he's like, can you tell me what's going on? So verse 16, then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time, and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's their Jewish names, their Hebrew names. Verse 18, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning the secret that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. so they pray, and their prayer is answered. Verse 19, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast made known unto us the king's matter. all right, so verse 24, and now he'll go to the king. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, well, first he's got to ask permission, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said thus unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah. I don't think he did much to find him. Daniel went and told him, but anyway. I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said unto Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? What's kind of funny is then Daniel kind of stalls a little bit, but not really. He gives credit to God first, but he somehow gets away with that. Verse 27, Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king, but there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. So he says, so here we go. Verse 29, as for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter, and he revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, the secret... Well, no, he's still going on. But as for me, the secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Okay, now Daniel finally gets to explaining it. Verse 31, thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. The image's head, or statue, if you will, was of fine gold, his breast and arms of silver, his belly and thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet partly part of iron and part of clay. All right, so we've got a statue, four sections, different materials, mostly metal-ish. Verse 34, thou sawest till that a stone was cut out with hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. I think it's interesting that it broke the feet, and that set off, I guess, a chain reaction that broke the whole statue into pieces, to dust, really. verse 36, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. I don't know why he says we. I know his friends are there, and they prayed with him, but Daniel got the interpretation in his own dream. The way I read that, right? So, and he's the one speaking, but he says we, so he's kind of bringing his friends along, it seems. Verse 37, thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory, and wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of the heaven that hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all, thou art this head of gold. And after thee shall rise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. They kind of just, But the fourth kingdom gets all the attention. I'm saying this for a reason that I'm setting up for the next section. Anyway, verse 40, the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. Or maybe weak, ears might say. Verse 43, and whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. They just really don't stick together, right? Verse 44, and in the days of these kings, this is the key memory verse. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these other kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain with hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel, and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. Then the king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So Daniel does remember to consider his friends. Make sure they're taken care of as well. So, all right. So I like to do this sort of in case you missed it section. After all that, kind of going through the story itself. So, you almost have to miss this part, because we're reading in English. So verse 4, as I kind of made a side note, it says that the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. It's not just for that one sentence. This goes on for the whole rest of the chapter and for three more chapters. Or is it four? Two, three, four, five. What is that? That's six chapters, isn't it? That's six chapters total. And it goes on in Aramaic in the book of Daniel. It's just very strange. There's only, one other major section like this, and it's in the book of Ezra, where it just goes on for many, many paragraphs in Aramaic. You get a couple words and maybe a verse here and there in Aramaic. Most of the rest of the Old Testament's in Hebrew. But this begins a section that goes on in Aramaic. So, I don't know if there must be some kind of significance to that. But it's rather interesting, detail. So, you'd never know that except for footnotes in your Bible and that sort of thing. So that's quite interesting. I don't know. Verse 16, I don't know. This is just me, but it seems like, depending on how your translation reads, that Daniel, you know, says, I'll go interpret the dream. And then he says, hey guys, let's pray so I can interpret the dream. So I don't know if he's got that much confidence or it's just a last ditch effort anyway, because they're going to die. So you might as well, right? I don't know. And then what I think is neat is that even though the king is very angry with all these magicians, or the Chaldeans or the wise men, that they didn't want to, interpret it, or tell them the dream. They're at least honest, you know. I mean, you compare this to the scene with Pharaoh, and Moses where they're just happy to make, you know, their magical illusions, and please the king. They're at least honest. So that's a segue into, we read of some other wise men in the Bible, in the time of the birth of Jesus, right? So I'll just read that real quick in context. You know the story, but Matthew 2, verses 1 and 2. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him." Does that always ever struck you as odd? There's these wise men from far away, and yet somehow they know about Jewish culture and a prophecy, and somehow got some sort of sign with this star that they followed and wound up, you know, all the way in Jerusalem, where King Herod was, right? And I think Jerusalem, right? I mean, I know he's born in Bethlehem, but anyway, in Israel, right? And where these guys come from, and it makes you wonder. I don't know, but you know, you read this story in Daniel, and you say, well, I know of some wise men that are in the east. Babylon is east of Jerusalem, they you know, back then they would have known Daniel, and Daniel would have told them about, you know, the scriptures, maybe, right? And so maybe they kind of cross-trained between Babylonian and later Persian, astrology and also, you know, what the Hebrew scriptures had. So I don't know, you know, but it is kind of an interesting, word there. The word for wise men in the New Testament in Greek is magi. Sounds like magicians, right? All right. Okay, so what are these kingdoms that are represented in the story? Traditional view is, well, we know the head is Babylon. Daniel says that. Okay, so we got that one knocked off the list. The traditional view is that the chest is the Medes and the Persians, which would make all the sense in the world, right? Because the story of the writing on the wall ends with, get my names right, Darius, is it? Who's the king of the Medes taking over Babylon. And then after that is Cyrus, who's king of Persia, takes over. And history tends to record the Medes and the Persians as one kind of combined empire. Not only that, a later prophecy in Daniel puts them together as one combined empire. So I would tend to go with the idea that the Medes and the Persians as one single empire. Some people say, let's count them separately as different empires in the statue. And okay, you can chew on that, but it's hard to believe that. Anyway, then another following empire was Greece, and then the big one that kind of takes over everything would be Rome. And that, you'd expect that, right? If you don't remember anything from world history class, you remember the Roman Empire, right? They were cool, right? So, you know that one. They were big. They took over everything. That's the one that's in Jesus' day. So it would make sense that that's the one that the stone mountain, it destroys, in a manner of speaking, is the empire that existed at that time. So I feel pretty confidently that that goes along with that, that tracks with the history of the world empires, and all of that. But just to throw it out there, some people will split it. So they'll leave Rome off and they'll just say the empires are Babylon, the Medes, the Persians, and then the Greeks. And so, yeah. All right. And then what about that last one? How can you, I could explain this, right? But I mean, the rock is Christ, right? We know this from hindsight now. Might not have been as obvious to the Jews, but, it's, you know, the rock is Christ, and his kingdom would be the church. And we talked a lot about that this morning, actually. So that works out really well. There's a similar kind of a prophecy in Isaiah 2, And then Daniel 7 kind of goes along with this, which is what we're going to talk about next. So I'll leave it at that. But yes, that's what the rock is, would be Jesus and the church. And so, again, I kind of put an overview slide there for if you're keeping up in your notes, but I failed to do the note page. So I don't know. I'll leave that up for a second, but otherwise I don't have much reason to linger on that one. So again, I do apologize for that. So, all right, so our next lesson, yeah, there's only two today, not like there's ten, but is about the Son of Man. And I start with a picture of Jesus hearing the healing the paralytic man, because that's what we think of when we hear Son of Man, is that it's Jesus. And that's right. That is a title he used a lot of himself, over 80 times in the Gospels, more than anything else, which kind of gets me into the next slide. So, well, that's true that Jesus does refer to himself as the Son of Man. It seems more than any other kind of description of himself. He doesn't refer to himself as the Christ hardly at all. It seems mostly, actually, after his resurrection. And so, but there is, as you can see from the picture, this really interesting prophecy in Daniel 7 that involves the Ancient of Days, which would be God and the Father, and the Son of Man. And no, the book of Daniel does not say the Son of Man is going to be someone named Jesus of Nazareth a few hundred years from now. So it leaves it a mystery. And so that's what we'll talk about a little bit. So why is this important? And it's the scripture reading that we had that Paul read for us this morning, is that Jesus claimed to be the Son of Man, and the Jews knew what he was talking about. And if it was ever confusing, that scripture reading in Matthew 26, he quotes, Jesus quotes Daniel 7 with the prophecy very directly about the Son of Man. And so, you know, he made a very clear statement that he is that guy from the prophecy. And that made the high priest quite angry. Not that they weren't trying to kill him already, but, you know, that seemed to be kind of almost the last straw. You know, it's like, how dare you claim to be the Son of Man from Daniel 7? So what is this prophecy? So we should talk about that, right? And I think it's interesting that the high priest calls it blasphemy. Well, I mean, blasphemy kind of means that, you know, he's, to me, that he's calling himself equal to God. And so, yeah, you're on the right track, high priest. Good job. But instead of getting angry, you should have bowed down and worshiped. But as for the term Son of Man, it is what it sounds like. It just means a person. So it's a strange title to get all worked up about, isn't it? Right? So, why is that? And we'd have to look at the story to, see about that. Sorry, I'm not used to my phone going off. Should be on silent. All right. I'm just trying to check the time. So Daniel 7, I'm not going to read the whole chapter on this. I'll just give you some brief bullet points through the chapter. This is going to sound similar. Daniel, this time Daniel has the dream, not the king, but Daniel has a dream, and there's four beasts that represent four kings, which, you know, in, the last one is described as a kingdom. This is pretty similar, right? I mean, the king and a king and a kingdom are different things, but they're not, you know, like, I mean, what is a kingdom unless it has a king or a queen ruling over it, right? So, I mean, they're pretty similar ideas. but specifically, this dream says that the four beasts represent four kings. And the fourth one is described as a kingdom later. So there, I think there's an overlap in terminology there. But anyway, doesn't this sound familiar? A dream about four kingdoms or four kings? Didn't we kind of just talk about this? but it's different. This is four beasts, not a statue in four pieces. And at the end, or somehow at some point, the saints of the Most High are going to possess an everlasting kingdom, which is maybe a little confusing because, are they going to possess one of those kingdoms or a different one? And it's kind of both. It seems to be that they, take over a kingdom and then, but their dominion is over all the kingdoms of the whole world. And it doesn't, I don't think it really says how that's going to happen, just that it will, after the Ancient of Days judges it to be so. Speaking of, there's this character named the Ancient of Days, so he's there, and that, I mean, almost certainly has to be God the Father, in this story in Daniel 7. But the really challenging part is the Son of Man. We read this last week, this verse is also, but, it'd be very good to read this again. I'm going to start at verse 9. I want to read about the Ancient of Days also. I'm looking for a specific word that I didn't want to miss. Oh, it's right at the beginning. Okay. Just want to make sure I started far enough ahead. All right, so Daniel 7, starting in verse 9. I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like the pure wool, and his throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. So this is some kind of crazy-looking throne, right? A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him, 10,000, I just added that word, that's not there. 1,000 thousands ministered unto him, there it is, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were open. I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words, which the horn spake, that's part of one of the beasts, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time, which I think is interesting. So the point being that, to me, that these kingdoms, were no longer world empires, but they still exist, right? Like, we still have a country of Greece today, you know? So they didn't, like, completely vanish from the planet, but they're just not, taking over the world anymore. All right, so here's the main thing. In verse 13, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. I don't even know who they is. and there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Again, that sounds awful familiar. It sounds a lot like Daniel 2. But how strange is it that it's described as a son of man, or one like a son of man, is doing all these things, but he's coming on the clouds of heaven, and he's ruling over the whole world? What kind of person is this that can do all these things? you get the idea that this is going to be some amazing person that comes one day. And there he was, right there in front of the high priest and other Jewish leaders, and they didn't see that it was really him, even though he said, "I'm that guy." they wouldn't have it. But if it's a son of man, it is a person, right? And so why shouldn't it be Jesus of Nazareth? But I had a thought, but I don't want to go off on that tangent. So anyway, so as I said, Jesus uses the term a lot, and I just picked a few from I did a search, and through the Gospels, which starts at Matthew, and just grabbed a handful of the first ones. we could go on and on and on, but I'll read some of these, just so you kind of see the different ways that Jesus used it about himself. So Matthew 8 and verse 20, and Jesus saith unto him, the foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. It was kind of that suffering that he goes through. Another page to Matthew 9 and verse 6. And that's that scene of the paralytic being healed. But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins. Then saith he to the sick of the palsy, arise, take up thy bed, and go into thine house. So, again, I don't know what people were thinking when he said that. This didn't seem to quite anger people as much along the way. It's only that final scene that seems to, well, that I notice, it really angering people. Matthew 12 and verse 8, for the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day. Now, I probably could have quoted you that verse, but I always think about the fact that he's Lord of the Sabbath. I never really pick up on all these references to the Son of Man, all the way through it. So it's like I said, it's 80 something times he says it. It's just everywhere, in the Gospels, but, it was never, you know, all that. I know I never really thought myself about how it relates to the book of Daniel or anything. So, Matthew 13, and this is the parable, explaining the parable of the seeds and the sower. I'll just read a couple of these verses. But Matthew 13:37, he answered and said to them, he that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man. Okay, so that's a nice picture that he's doing this good of sowing the good seed. And then you get kind of the other side of it in verse 42. I should start in 41. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity, and shall cast them into a furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. So obviously the Son of Man also executes judgment at the end of time. Isn't it interesting, though, that it's in a furnace of fire? You ever heard a story about a furnace of fire? Like last week, you know, with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? I don't know if there's any, you know, if that's just a coincidence or not. Hard to believe, right? But I thought that was kind of interesting. and then chapter 16, verse 28 of Matthew. He says, verily I say unto you, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. So there he's certainly starting to tie it together. Or we see an example of that where he's tying it to what sounds an awful lot like the Daniel 7 prophecy, of himself. All right. So like I said, are these four beast kingdoms the same as the four statue kingdoms, in Daniel 2? And people will debate this, right? To me, it's hard to see how they could be different kingdoms. There's all sorts of theories, and someone named Antiochus Epiphanes or something like that. I barely got a lock on the Medes and the Persians and the Greeks. Okay. I mean, don't ask me terribly much more than that. you know, it seems to still all fit to me. I mean, I know there's differences with the details of it, but these would be the empires that Daniel would have known at the time. You know, like I say, they weren't huge, but the people would have probably been aware of the Persians and the Greeks. Greece was around then. Rome was not. I tried to look it up. It says Rome was established, the Roman Empire, in like 27 BC, but that doesn't really make a lot of sense because I think Julius Caesar lived before then, you know? So, it's something like, you know, they'd kind of been around for a while, but not actually had like an official, like emperor until that time or something. But even still, it was like something like the 300s is when Rome really kind of became, you know, more than just a city. And that would be well after Daniel. I say that because Daniel Daniel has this real fascination with the fourth beast in the story. And so that's why I think it kind of makes sense, because he's like, what is this? You know, and it's like, I think he knows, like, this is something that isn't on Earth yet. And so he has a lot of questions about that. And again, also, I think it's kind of interesting that we don't see much about how the saints do come to possess this kingdom at the end. You know, which is that final kingdom, but also encompasses all the kingdoms. And again, I'd say maybe that's because we kind of know this detail from Daniel 2 already, that it is the rock that destroys them. And in that same way, we know that the Son of Man is going to rule this final kingdom. So to me, as a Christian in 2025, I can kind of, in hindsight, I feel like it makes sense that, you know, they overlap. But if you're a scholar, maybe you might disagree, and I don't know. So, all right. And so again, just an overview. If you're taking notes, just want to, go over anything we missed. That's the lesson or lessons, for this morning. just two really interesting kind of prophecies, and one that kind of turns into a theme, throughout the Gospels anyway, of the Son of Man. Hope that helped and maybe made you think a little bit about, some of those things. It certainly gave me a lot to think about. But we'll close and, extend the invitation if there's any here that, do believe that Jesus has come from heaven and is coming again on the clouds and, for one final judgment day. And you're not right, with God. This would be the time to, any time is the time, but this is a good time, to make that right, either to obey the gospel if you have not yet, or to, dedicate your life again. And if there's any that just would like, prayers of the saints, then please come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.